The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
So we spent part of last week with Bob and Limits telling me what I like and what I don't like. Ice cream, what I like on pizzas, and how I was going to love the college football conference championships, even though they're pretty much meaningless and an unnecessary injury risk and too much these days. Now, Oregon-Penn State was entertaining, but I was hounded the entire game with the question in the back of my mind, why are we doing this? And I got my answer. When the bracket came out, for no reason is why we did it. Joel Klatt, who played football at a high level and who works for Fox Sports, said what a horrendous job this committee did. The team that was penalized the most was Oregon, and the team that was rewarded the most was Penn State. I guess the Ducks should have laid down in the fourth quarter. Just atrocious. Bob, you agree or disagree?
Well, first of all, you know, atrocious in that what? I don't think the committee felt Ohio State was as good of a team as maybe you do. That's why they had them down to eight.
Me, everybody in America thinks
all right,
that Oregon
Ohio State
got rewarded. Oregon got punished for winning, and Penn State got rewarded with an easier path starting in the quarterfinals.
And I would agree, based on brand awareness, that Penn State looks to have an easier play. But I will remind you that SMU is a very good football team. That showed me a lot throughout the course of this season. I also will remind you that Boise State is a team that, even though people don't want to give them enough credit, I've watched some of the games they've played. They should have beaten Oregon early in the season. They went down to the very end with that game. Very talented team that not a lot of people want to give credit to because they're Boise State, and you don't see them all that much. We're geared in this culture to talk about the brand names all the time. Or Alabama should have been in. I'm glad Alabama wasn't in. They got that right.
Because if they don't get that right, and if they don't honor the winners of the conference championship games, they're ruining their own television entity. In other words,
you don't think Georgia? They didn't get screwed, did they? They're going to take on the winner of Indiana and Notre Dame.
Right.
They won a conference championship. They got what they deserve. No, not every matchup is going to look like they got a bye. That's the most important thing they got out of this. Anyone who won those conferences got a bye. That's a big advantage. I don't care who you play next.
Oregon deserved a bye probably no matter what, number one. Number two, nobody's talking about it. The SMU thing is immaterial to comparing Penn State to Oregon. Starting in the quarterfinals, if Penn State gets there, the fact that Oregon appears to have the harder road than Penn State is the thing everybody's harping on, and I agree with them.
Appearances are deceiving sometimes.
Fair enough. You disagree. You would rather play Ohio State or Tennessee than Boise State. Limits, where do you stand
on
this?
I have a very distinct opinion on this. Joel Klatt, the amount of complaining that was going on in his timeline, and I like Joel Klatt a lot. He does incredible stuff with Fox, but he probably cried himself to sleep with the amount of, oh, Oregon, what happened here? Texas, the easier route for Penn State. Yeah, I might be a little bit biased. But if you're Your problem is not with the committee if you don't like everything that's going on. Your problem is, I think what people are complaining, their complaints are misguided. Because if you have an issue, your issue should be with how this college football playoff was set up to begin with conference champions receiving automatic byes and getting the top four seats, regardless of how they're actually seated in the top 25.
Right.
And whoever gets the 12 seed as that fifth conference champion.
So you're saying that the conference champions should have been guaranteed a spot in the playoff, obviously, but not guaranteed a bye.
Yes.
Right? Yes.
No,
I agree.
Your problem with
right.
the format, not with the committee.
I would agree that format was, from the beginning, it was going to set themselves up for this sort of situation. So I would agree with that. But when it comes to these games now, you got to just go out and win them.
I know that.
I mean, what are you supposed to do? There's something to be said for Clemson. You talk about a conference champ that got screwed a little bit. Clemson wins their conference, and yet they're a 12 seed, though.
That's fine with me.
They'd be a 12 seed in the regular 1 through 12, too.
Okay, but my point is they won a conference championship, yet they get discarded. They didn't get anything helping them. They won a conference championship. If you have a problem with conference championships, that should be it. That why did they get?
Well, there's only four.
I understand that. Can you make a case that they're better than SMU? They just beat SMU.
Yeah, maybe they could have switched places. That's a legitimate one. Here's what I meant to say before when we talked about Alabama versus SMU. Was this Bruce Feldman? I think wrote this in The Athletic. If you dropped a two-loss SMU below Alabama in the final rankings, that would mean SMU fell at least two spots as a conference championship game loser and the tide climbed while idle. That would have been a precedent that would have threatened the worth of conference title games. He's exactly right about that. And so I'm not giving anybody credit for keeping Alabama out of this thing. They're protecting the television entity that is the conference championship game, because all you would have heard if Alabama got in was why should they move up while they're idle, while SMU goes out and plays an exciting game in a conference championship and gets punished. So no credit to the committee there. They're protecting the television entity that's the conference championship.
Let's talk about
game.
How you would reformat. Are you suggesting just go 1 through 12 based on how teams rank and using all the computer data that you have? Forget conference champions altogether and just go 1 through 12 and then reseed?
Well, maybe we should answer this question first. Should the conference champion be the regular season champ or the conference championship game champion?
That's a legitimate question, too.
And should conference championship games still exist?
Well, they will because it's money. They always will because it's money.
I don't know
if
they
always
will.
Well, in this system, if you're going to have this many, they may down the road go to 16 teams. Who knows?
Oh, I think they will very soon.
So therefore, then you can't even factor in. I think down the road, conference championship games will eventually go away, but not right now. But this format, I think, Austin, you're right. If you had a problem, you should have had it at the beginning of the year the way it was set up, because it was going to ultimately lead to these discussions.
And I find it hilarious, Alabama people complaining about not getting into the playoffs after they were blown out by Oklahoma and they lost to Vanderbilt.
See, you can't afford to do that.
24-3.
Yeah, but limits, who has SMU beaten? A single ranked team?
Shouldn't going to conference championships and playing in those games and being a field goal away from it matter?
Doesn't it depend on what conference it is?
Well, do rankings even matter,
too?
Florida State was 10th ranked to begin the season and turned out to be a complete fraud. There are others like that. These rankings sometimes are a little bit skewed based on how they start a season.
Well, it's inarguable that Alabama's schedule was superior to SMU's.
Was not,
come on.
But SMU was way down in the picture. No one even thought of SMU as being. They worked themselves through winning. I get it. You're never going to have an even playing field when it comes to what conference is better or where the competition comes from. But I mean, you can't do that.
You shouldn't compare schedules?
No, if you go 1 through 12, you can do that. I'm saying SMU had to fight their way and could not lose a game.
No, I hear that. I'm quibbling with him saying that Alabama fans are crazy. I mean, I think they have a legitimate case.
No, they don't.
No, they don't. It should matter.
No, they don't.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
It should matter what you do in your conference. You can't. Teams were trying to get out of the ACC.
What did SMU do? Did they win their conference?
They did not lose one conference game until the conference championship.
Oh, so they didn't win their conference, and Alabama played a significantly stronger schedule.
Yeah, don't lose to Vanderbilt.
Alabama beat number 2 Georgia.
Don't get blown out by a horrible Oklahoma team. Okay,
and
but
they're the team in years. And you score only 3 points.
Yeah, they also played number 11 Tennessee, number 21 Missouri, number 15 LSU. They blew them out 42-13.
LSU's
so
not
you just,
that good.
You just ignore the schedule then.
No, I'm saying
you don't compare schedules.
I think rankings are very subjective, and you shouldn't make conclusions based on where numbers lie.
Well, it's inarguable that Alabama played a far superior schedule than SMU.
Yeah, like they're a couple FB, like playing Mercer and playing 5-7 Wisconsin
you
in their non-conference
that?
Schedule.
You would argue that?
Yeah, they scheduled these horrific non-conference games that
right.
I kept seeing all these Alabama people just popping up in mentions and stuff like that, and they're complaining, oh, their schedule, we're never going to schedule a non-conference game again.
I wouldn't.
No non-conference.
No, I'd copy SMU's schedule every year.
Don't you want one non-conference game to try to elevate yourself? Because clearly your crappy non-conference schedule did not help you whatsoever.
The only reason they're not in limits is because they want to protect college football conference championship games. And they knew if they put Alabama in there, that could have spelled the end of it. That's what I think.
They should matter. They played. How
schedule
about,
rank in the country, Alabama 15, SMU 61st. That's on the Sagarin rankings, which strictly go by computers. You know, the AP poll or anything else.
Then you had to change the whole system, and this is how you're going to look at it then. They came up with this in advance. This is how the system would work. Conference championships mean something, and winning until the end means something, regardless of who you play in this format. Now, if you want to change the format, go
but
right ahead.
But they didn't win their championship.
But they didn't lose all year. So they constantly moved up, even though they played an ACC schedule, which I will grant you is difficult as what you see in the SEC. But if you're going to use that as your – then do this differently. Come up with the best teams based on Sagarin ratings, if that's what you want to do.
Okay, then it would easily be Alabama.
So all right, but the system doesn't exist right now. You can't change the rules.
But Alabamans have an argument. I might argue for SMU, too. But the idea that they're crazy for thinking their team. What's SMU's best win? Anybody?
At the time, I don't know. It was Pitt? Pitt may have been it. And they destroyed them.
They put Pitt on the graphic, which was bad.
Pitt.
But if your argument for Alabama is all
and then,
well,
and then
our schedule,
you're telling me that Alabama's non-conference.
Yeah, I'm gonna read it to you. Western Kentucky, congrats on beating up on South Florida, a Wisconsin team that was not good this year, one of the last place teams in the Big Ten. And then, congratulations for scheduling Mercer in the middle of November.
Yeah,
so Alabama, if you want to complain,
would you compare that? Would you compare that?
Would
you compare that to SMU playing Houston Christian?
Western
Every school
Kentucky,
in the country does
out?
That. Every school in the country does that limits.
Well, why that's one of their main arguments. It's just it's unfathomable.
That we played a harder schedule than SMU? It's a very legitimate argument.
No, they're talking about not even scheduling any valuable non-conference games at all and just putting cupcake after cupcake on the schedule.
I would. Anyway.
All right, we're not going to solve this, so can we delve into these matchups and what has to happen for a team like Penn State?
Yes.
Because even though this is not considered a top five matchup where James Franklin is 1-14, this is a playoff. To me, it counts the same as a top five. In other words, it is a winner-take-all mentality in terms of this game against a team you're favored by 9.5. How important is it for James Franklin?
Well, that's the question for me. Is James Franklin's now, did you mention, 1-14?
Yes.
I was distracted for a minute there, Bob. 1-14? Against, like, if he was 4-10 or something... He literally never beats the best teams. So normally, to me, it would be crazy to think that this is James Franklin, you know, playing for his job. But if he loses at home to SMU in the first round, I would have to seriously ask myself, if I'm running Penn State, do we have the guy we need to have to get to the very top here? And is that the idea, or are we good with this? Because if that's the idea, then he probably has to go. And the way that he coached the other game, I had several problems with that. What do you think, Bob?
Well, I think not only do you have to win this one, I think they're set up, as you say, especially if you're not going to give these teams, I think, the due they deserve. I think Boise is a very good team, by the way. But if they should win those two games, they potentially could have a matchup against Indiana in one of the semifinals or Notre Dame.
Sure.
They're
capable
all,
of winning it.
Yes. Yeah.
They played with Oregon.
So all the more... expectation level rises for James Franklin. Because if you're going to look at any potential based on brand names, any potential way to get deep into this, Penn State probably has the best opportunity.
Franklin, in a score fest, him going for a field goal early in the second half. They knew they had to score on every possession.
Going for two, didn't he do that too? When
that drives me insane when they do that, and then you're down eight. But you know, coaches do that, I guess. And then he blew a timeout late in the game. It's just he's like Sean McDermott of the Bills. It's like your end game management, your game management period is undermining the talent that you have. Right. I think
that's where Kansas City has won every one of their games. Game management at the end of games, and you can make a case they should be, 6-7.
By the way, Penn State got jobbed by the officials too in that game.
I thought so too.
Gene Steratore comes on along with both announcers, and they say on the alleged fair catch, they say right away. Steratore says, "Oh, the hand's got to go above
right,
the shoulder."
And then
it's
they
good.
Change.
Then they change it, and everybody on the broadcast is like, "Yeah, good call.
No,
I guess
that was a bad call."
Terrible.
Terrible.
The amount
call.
Of missed holding calls on various plays from Oregon. But Penn State has the best path, guys. The best path. The easiest path. Because
thank you for admitting that the rankings committee got it completely wrong and rewarded Penn State for losing that game.
Blame the system, not the committee.
I will.
The way that it was set up.
All
because,
right,
yeah, they do.
Didn't the committee have something to do with setting it up?
Maybe. I don't know the answer to that. But if so, then yeah, you can blame them. But, I mean, whoever the member panel was that was in there, I'm sure that it was approved on by all the big conferences and execs and as administrators and whatever it might be.
Who's going to win?
That's the burning question moving forward here.
Wait,
now.
We didn't answer the first question.
We have 2 weeks, by the way, for
Should
this.
Franklin
two
be
weeks.
Fired if they lose at home?
Ugh.
I'm going to say yes.
Yes.
I'm 50-50 on that right now. I really am. And the 50% of me that says no is saying, okay, you have a program that's been functionally very good, that they get deep.
Very good.
It is. And so the next guy, it's like Ryan Day. You know, Ryan Day is in a situation where if he loses, very much he could be out of a job. If he wins a couple of games, all of a sudden that may change the perception. But yet all the winning that these coaches do doesn't seem to matter unless it's big game. I've talked to people who said to me, if you're Ohio, and this is Ohio State fans, said I'd rather have them beat Michigan than win a national championship.
Yes.
Now, is that logic
people
a little bit
that.
Skewed?
I use that with Ron a
is
couple of years.
Is that logic
no,
a little
not,
bit skewed?
Not,
you don't win
not, a national
championship. You're
going to
take a national championship versus a head-to-head win.
This happened with North Carolina and Duke a couple of years ago, where I argued that North Carolina fans would rather beat Coach K in his final game in the Final Four, then win the national championship. Like, they'll take that. If that's what they get out of that season and they lose
yeah,
in the title game.
They'd win that game and they'd be mad that they got knocked out in the first round.
I don't know, man. They have for the rest of their
people
lives.
People are fickle that way when it comes to what their expectations are. They
I
move
know.
The goalposts all the time.
But
you
got
to be somewhat realistic about things, too.
I think it's realistic to expect that your football coach, with the talent he has on hand, would at least once, well, he did do it once, twice, win a game against the top five.
Yeah, I will
he's
also
1-14.
When you say with the talent, he is responsible for that talent.
Sure.
He's a very good recruiter.
Yes.
Don't underestimate how much that's important here. And I'm not trying to defend him in any way. I'm trying to say that sometimes you can't give in to all the pressure there is on these job expectations.
I do agree with you there that you can't. But I've been a defender of Franklin. And quite frankly, even of Narduzzi as recently as after 2 seasons ago when they won 9 after the 11. Like, this is good enough. Win 8 or 9, then every once in a while have a breakthrough year, and he's just fallen flat on his face. I defended those 2 long deals that they signed with these guys, saying this is pretty good. And in Franklin's case, it still is. It's pretty good. But what's the goal here? And if you go to, well, that wouldn't be a top 5 team, but if you lose a playoff game at home, you have to start asking, when is this going to happen? Like, they were on even terms with Oregon for most of that game. I thought they also got cute in the second half, Bob. They were bludgeoning them in the ground game. They're averaging 7 yards a carry. We're watching the game at home, Limits. You're a Penn State guy.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm saying this drive to open the half is a beautiful thing. You're taking time off the clock. You're shortening the game. You're running just conventional, smash him in the face. Then what does he do? What do they do? They get cute with a little hurry-up play, and that's the pass to Warren that would have been a great catch, remember? And then after that, they stall, and then he attempts a field goal. And then you're chasing the game the whole rest of the way. Line up and run the ball, Bob, if you're averaging 7 yards a carry.
Yeah, I agree. It's the beauty of the game. We can break down every play. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. If it doesn't, we criticize. If it does, we let it go.
No, I don't.
I try not to play that game.
A lot of people play that game.
I try to
We
play...
played that game with a fake punt by the Steelers earlier.
I love the fake punt, and I'll
and
still
I do
say
too.
I
and
love
there are a
the
lot of people
punt.
Who question it because of where it took place on the field, which is the beauty of the call. It took place at a time when you never would have expected it. That's the beauty of those calls.
Well, that's what players and coaches always accuse us and fans of is, oh, yeah, if the play works, you'll just say it was great. If it doesn't, no. No, no. I don't want to play.
But largely, you hindsight. Do see that. You
I
see,
know, you do.
In that particular play, we had it all day. We had people calling us, what are they doing? Well, didn't it work? It did work.
Which play?
The fake punt. Pierre drop. Yeah.
Well, in this case, it was Franklin getting cute when they didn't need to. Remember Wal Harris said hindsight is 50-50, Ron? I mean, Bob?
Oh, here we go. You're getting wrong. And I would agree, Ron. Thank you.
But what I was going to say, I completely forgot now. If you would have asked me at the time, see, here's the thing. If you would have frozen the game on that drive in the second half and said, hey, Joe, Bob, Limits, do you think Penn State should all of a sudden get cute here and go to a hurry up and try to hit a big play?
Or keep putting Bo Prabula in the game to run?
He did have a nice run.
He had one good run, yes.
I would have said, no, just they're pounding them up front and taking time off the clock. They can't stop them. Just keep doing what you're doing. So even if that play works, I'm wondering about it. Honest to God, I am.
It's by far the best the offense has looked all year. But, guys, the play of the game, at least undoubtedly in my mind, with the loud thing that I yelled that I'm not allowed to say on air, was the fumble from Dylan Gabriel right after Penn State scored. They have him backed up in their own end. It's first down. Denied Dennis Sutton forces a fumble, and Oregon pounces on it. All the momentum was on Penn State's side. Yeah. The crowd was rocking. The building was electric. And they can't jump on the fumble. Oregon continues the drive, goes all the way down and scores, and makes it a two-score game again. That was the gut punch.
All right, pick a winner very quickly. I'm taking Georgia in this bracket as the national champion. Bob?
You're going to go that far already picking winners?
Pick a winner, yeah.
Hold on, let me look at this again.
Limits, pick a winner.
I'm not going to pick Penn State because that'll sound too biased, and I don't want to jinx it. And James Franklin will maybe find a way to lose the national championship. I'm fearful of that. I think Oregon at the moment is the winner. They impress me.
We'll just wait on Bob here.
So I'm just trying to figure out.
Internally analyzes the games.
Oh, here we go. But, I mean, you're picking one winner. Can't we go game to game here? I'm going to go out and say Texas.
Wow. Holy bird follicles.
I thought about picking Texas.
All right, very quickly. 1 minute or less, the Juan Soto deal for $760.
Why is it 1 minute or less? There's
because
so
we got to get to the
into.
NFL. We got to get to back to the Steelers.
We have 4 hours. We've spent 2.5 on the NFL. We can do it again, but 1 minute?
Yeah, 1 minute. It's just baseball. Nobody cares that much.
They do care about what it means to other teams who can't or won't pay.
You're wasting
and
our minute.
And quite frankly, while it's $765 and on the surface insane, I get it. The insane part for me is guaranteed all the way through, no matter what happens. That's
a tough
thing.
And could go over $800 million.
And it could. But he also has an opt-out out of 5 years. People say, why would you opt out? Well, you never know. Here's my thing with this. Number one, the league has a huge problem that they ignore every time they have an opportunity. This is crying for some sort of economic stability, which they never seem to go by because everyone makes money. And then the lesser feeders always agree because they're getting taken care of, so they don't care. But when it comes to average annual value, okay, $51 million, most every quarterback in the NFL eventually is going to surpass that. Jason Tatum is going to get more. He has a $300 million deal, but it's 5 years. Next one will be more. He'll make more per year than any of these guys in baseball. So from that point of view, it's not as outrageous as it sounds. The product that I hate is guaranteed. When that became part of the game, it really changed everything for me.
Is that the guaranteed isn't that huge, and you always get what the market dictates. That must mean baseball's revenues are flourishing, which they are.
Yeah, but nobody's the system stinks.
Yeah, the system's fine. Everybody goes to the World Series. Tampa Bay's they have a variety of teams.
You're gonna tell me now if you have a chance.
Go read Jason Stark. They have more of a variety of teams go to the World Series than go to the Super Bowl.
But every year, my argument on this has been, who has a better shot of winning a division year in and year out? Who? You know who. It's the Dodgers, it's the Mets, it's whoever wants
either
to pay
get,
the most.
Either get with the game or quit the game then. That's what I'm saying. Either pour money into your team so you can compete
Pittsburgh
or don't compete.
The Pittsburgh Pirates, if they wanted to, could have signed Juan Soto to the exact same amount of money, and their payroll would move up to about $130 million, which is doable year to year.
So the system's not broken.
The system is broken in that it's not forcing owners to spend. Owners who don't want to spend don't have to spend.
You got to collectively bargain that, Bob, and they're not going to do it. So either sit down at the poker table and play or get out. In the meantime, tons of teams have a shot. The Rangers, the Rays have been to the World Series twice. The Tigers. No, that's proven.
I don't
proven.
Agree with that at all.
No, that's
okay,
proven.
Okay, once in a blue moon. What did the Rangers do this year? They went completely backwards. You know, if they have a shot, show me year in and year out that you have a shot.
No, that's a fact, Bob, that more teams get to the World Series than get to the Super Bowl. Jason Stark writes about it every year.
Believe what you want to believe. I don't agree with it. I think economically
it's just a fairy tale. It's a fact.
Okay.
Then spend to play. Sit down.
You're going to force people to spend who don't want to spend. That's what you need.
You can't.
You have to.
You can't. It has to
every
be collectively
other league,
bargained.
Every other league has it.
Right. And the baseball doesn't, and they're not going to. Unless the players are willing to sit out for a long time to get it, and they don't want it. Right? They want money.
At some point, this thing is going to come crashing down. I mean, baseball at some point is going to need a salary cap and a salary floor.
What? When?
I don't know when that's going to be, but it's going to.
Record contracts, record TV deals. So when exactly is this going to come crashing down?
I don't know, Joe, but I feel like at some point it's going to be enough is enough where it is, to Bob's point, it is the Dodgers, it's going to be the Mets. It's always Atlanta. It's always the Yankees.
It's
going to
be the Mets?
Yeah, it's going to be the Mets. They're the ones that just signed Soto.
Here's some World Series winners recently. Right. Rangers, Astros, Braves, Nationals, Cubs. Cardinals, Giants, Yankees.
You won't hear
the same
Pirates,
team wins in
Reds,
football every year.
I'm just saying, Kansas City's an outlier. 1 year, they're not going to be unless you do it exactly right. And some teams do it exactly right. They draft, and that's a big part of it. But the teams that don't draft well can immediately erase those deficits by going out and spending a ton of money on somebody. The Pirates. Let's cut this short to this point. We spent over a minute. I've gone past my time, counselor.
Yeah.
The Pirates have a shot right now with this pitching staff being what it is to surround them in talent.
Sure.
And I would never think that they're going to go and give Juan Soto. But there is money to be spent. And I don't know that you can rely on what they have. You got to go outside and bring it in to try to capitalize on this four-year window with Skeens, Jones, and those guys.
We agree on that. Any team can win within this system. The Rays were just in the World Series three, four years ago. Diamondbacks were just in the World Series. Give me a break.
Give me
honestly.
A break. You actually think
there's nobody on earth who would agree that a system that's raking in record revenues, record free agent deals, record television ratings is a broken system.
It's a broken system, Joe.
Works great.
If you're
a small market team and you don't like it, then spend money to get in.
I agree
or
with
get
you
away
there.
From the poker
But the only
table.
Way you can make
the
them do it is to have
broken.
A floor and say you must spend. And if you don't spend, we're just going to give you all sorts of other luxury money so you don't have to do anything but pocket it.
That's pie in the sky. It's never happening. It's never happening. In the meantime,
well, you may be right, but it's wrong.
A different team
you may
wins
be
every
right,
year.
But you always are wrong.
Yeah,
Joe.
Bob is 100% right too.
Is he?
You're off base here. I think.
What aspect of it?
You're trying to tell me that the Yankees, the Mets, and those teams financially have the same
profitability as the Pirates, Reds. You need to stop doing is using the Mets as an example for teams that spend money.
Why?
With.
They're handing out
well, Cohen's,
huge
Cohen's
deals.
Involved now.
They don't
Cohen's
win
involved
limits.
Now. He
they
doesn't
don't
care.
Win.
He'll spend whatever it takes, and good for him. I want an owner who does that too, believe me. I'm not trying to defend Bob Nutting here in any way. I'm not. I'm trying to say Bob Nutting needs to be put to the test and spend.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't want to, then the league should be obligated to make him spend. That's all I'm saying.
The Mets were in the World Series in 15. They just got this owner. He's in, year three?
Yeah,
and they've
already
had significant improvements.
He gave Lindor $300 million.
When's the last time the Pirates, the Reds, and all the other small
market
teams have been there?
Pirates.
Milwaukee.
Tampa Bay.
Nobody's making excuses.
Nobody's making excuses.
I admit what it is.
Quit making excuses for the Pirates.
What I'm saying,
the A's were there for 20 straight years, practically, with a chance to win. And once you get to the playoffs, it doesn't matter. It's a crapshoot then anyway. Spend more money if you want to get in.
That is the most important thing, is getting a chance to get there and win a division.
Quit crying about the system. Seriously.
How many division champions have Dodgers won in a row now?
Seven, eight?
Yeah, I mean, it's just not going to change. They're always going to be there.
Well, let's look at the payrolls from last year, shall we? And see from highest to lowest how many teams won divisions, had a chance at the playoffs, everything else, Bob. And there's plenty every year. Cleveland is one of them. They're an example. Milwaukee barely spends $100 million. They're in the playoffs every year. And then you have the Mets, his favorite team, who craps out every year despite spending a ton of money. The Cubs spent $229 million. Texas, you just mentioned, spent $225
right.
million.
Right.
So,
and they're not guaranteed of doing anything because the Dodgers are going to put $1.2 billion into deferred payments now. They come up with a different strategy. Let's kick the money down the line. They're going to have Bobby Bonilla Day every day in L.A. pretty
soon. Good for them.
It's going to be July 1st. They're going to give out a whole bunch of money to somebody. And they can afford to do it because their local television revenue is out of sight.
Everybody profits.
But it should.
Everybody has a chance to win.
Okay.
Who doesn't profit in Major League Baseball? Which
team?
The teams
that don't spend because they refuse to spend.
I'm talking profit financially.
Well, they all do. That's why there's no reason to spend.
Exactly.
But that's stupid. Don't you think the system stinks if you're allowing that?
I'd love to have a salary cap, but it ain't happening. So for the 100th time, if you can't afford or you're unwilling to sit down at the poker game, then get the hell out.
I agree with that. But the only way you can make it happen is to force them. That's all my point.
It's not happening, Bob. It needs to be collectively bargained.
Okay, everyone says no.
Why would the players? Why would the players agree to that?
You're going to have to force them to agree to it. You're going to have to do something that makes them.
Okay.
We've had work stoppages before. If it's in the betterment of the game.
Why would you have a work stoppage if everybody's flourishing financially?
For the betterment of the game. That's all I'm saying. For every team having a shot. That's all. A legitimate shot based on what you do.
Once again, there's more parity in baseball than football. Go read Stark's column every year. Bob, we have almost no time for a trip around the NFL. Isn't that a shame?
We have an hour plus. What are you talking about?
We got to get back to Steelers, Bob.
Or isn't that part of the NFL?
Yes, but I'm talking the NFL at
all large. Right, we have a little bit of time. Let's go. The 1 minute conversation about Juan Soto turned into a 15-minute free-for-all.
A 50-minute free-for-all, yes. All right, let's go to the key games here. Well, let's go Eagles-Panthers because the Steelers play the Eagles. The Eagles, again, have people sniping at each other. I don't know that I've seen a team in sports have as much success as they seem to have with as many problems. They're 11-2, and the story coming out of that game was A.J. Brown saying, yeah, passing is our problem on offense. He doesn't like the workload that he's getting. Everybody seems so unhappy there all the time, Bob.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. You know, and again, that's how fans think. That's how players sometimes think. I like how Mike Williams thinks of the Steelers right now because he doesn't really, you know, he doesn't go out of his way to say, hey, I need more touches. I need more targets. He just plays the game. If he gets it, he gets it. Three games in a row, he never got targeted, didn't say anything. I like that kind of attitude because the bottom line is winning. I thought that was a trap game for them against Carolina. I thought looking ahead to what they had, which is the Steelers, that they were going to maybe get a little, you know, caught from behind. They almost did, but they won. And so that sets up a big matchup. As you say, the PIAA state championship next week in Philly.
Chiefs 19, Chargers 17. Here's my take on this that I tweeted last night. They're unbelievable. And Patrick Mahomes is obviously an all-time great. And they're sitting here looking at the number one seed. There have been eight teams previous to them who have tried for a three-peat, Bob. Guess how many secured the number one seed in the playoffs when they were trying?
None.
One. The Niners in 1990. And they lost to the New York Giants because they fumbled the ball late and the Giants hit a long field goal to go to the Super Bowl. What they're doing is almost unprecedented just in securing a one seed if they do it. However, I find them to be the most annoying, irritating professional sports team that I can ever remember. Every one of their games, I become highly irritated, sometimes to the point of being enraged. I'm so sick of them and the way that they win. All respect to them, Bob, but I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, 12-1. It could be 6-7. Last night's another example. You know, I was wondering about what Andy Reid would do, and I was kind of in my own way hoping that that kick that Matthew Wright made was a miss. He almost missed it. He clanged it. It was a short field goal. He clanged it and went in. But my complaint would have been, and I said this he called a timeout with 1 second left, Joe. If I'm going to be, and it wasn't fourth down, I'm going to try a field goal, I want to leave my way a little room in case there's a snap problem. I'll just fall on it, give myself another shot because it's not fourth down. He never gave that opportunity to exist. He was going to go all in with this Matthew Wright, one shot to win it, and he did. But, man, that's dangerous.
Who am I to challenge Andy Reid on how he manages the ends of games?
Did you think the same thing, though?
Did you
want to leave a little time in case there was some sort of botched snap?
I did, but he literally wins every single close game. They're unbelievable. Limits, do you find them irritating at this point?
100%.
I hated that game last night. I hated it.
They're not the Patriots because you don't have that same emotional attachment against the Chiefs because the Steelers and Patriots just had so many duels where they kept them away from the Super Bowl. But yeah, I'm so tired of the Chiefs. I'm so done. They're winning in the most dumb, irritating ways possible with missed kicks, doink kicks, block kicks, non-penalties calls. So sick of it.
You know what, though? They beat all kinds of teams doing it that way. And the only thing that matters to them, I mean, to some degree, Bob, they're running on fumes at this point. You know how many football games they've played in the last 5 years? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, but they're...
And yet, the only thing that matters to them is, will we put ourselves in position for the easiest path to the Super Bowl? And they're doing that.
Although
and you're
going
to have to beat him late.
I will say this, though. Going to Arrowhead does not have the same mystique as it did the last couple of years. It seems like they've won a lot of games there that they were one-score games at the end. Somehow they used Mahomes to get him out of the way, and he's done that. Give him a lot of credit for that. But I don't think they're as intimidating, let's say, going into Arrowhead as it's been before. They will get a week off if they get the number one seed, and that's huge.
It's huge.
For them especially because of what you cited.
They're the team to beat. Their best games are in front of them. I heard Kyle Brandt comparing them to the Jordan Bulls, and it's true. You know, this is mid-November, a back-to-back against the Hawks and the Knicks, and you might look like crap, and you probably will win them in the end, but who cares? Your body clock is set for playoff time. That's what the Chiefs' body clocks are set for. So you complain about Chris Jones. He hasn't done anything in a while. You go watch him in January. And Mahomes and Kelsey. And I can't stand it anymore. Limits. I can't.
I'm over it. I'm just over it. Like, it gets annoying when, well, you know, sorry, I tried to do something
else. That
scared
me, Limits.
I tried to do this.
Yes.
Because that's what's going on.
And the last thing is Rams 44, Bills 42. Oh, my God, what a football game that was. Josh Allen, the first quarterback in history with three throws and three runs for touchdowns. But Sean McDermott screws it up again. Again. He's like Franklin with this team.
I will say Puka Nacua is something else.
Oh, is he
great? I watch him, and I can't believe he went in the fifth round. Of all the advanced scouting that people have, and I know they're going to be misses, but man, what did you not like about him if you worked him out, if you saw his games in college, it made you think he was going to be anything but a second-round pick or, you know, whatever. The dude is just remarkable.
When they're healthy with Puka and Cooper Kupp.
Cooper made a great block on his touchdown.
And a great catch. It was an illegal block, but it was a nice block. They're 6-2 when they're healthy. Those guys have an elite passing game in a passing league. I would not want to play the Rams in a playoff game. But the Bills are going down at the one-yard line. They're down two scores, a minute left. They have all three timeouts. That's a nice position to be in. Josh Allen gets stopped on a quarterback sneak, okay? So at that point, you're playing the clock, not the Rams.
Correct.
The only thing that you can't do is call timeout. You can go back and spike the ball and go right to third down. That's fine. You can run back to the line and quarterback sneak again. That's fine. You can do anything but call timeout because you're playing the clock. And once you do that, you're forced into an onside kick and the game's basically over. What does McDermott do? He calls timeout. Limits. Yep. He calls timeout.
I didn't understand that. I did not.
It was the worst timeout since Chris Webber, Bob.
Well, that's going back a long ways, but yeah, it was.
Maybe J.R. Smith.
I mean, they fought all the way back to get back in that game, and I thought for sure the way things were going, they were going to win the game. But
What a ball game that was. All right, so the Steelers now are tied with the Bills. The Bills have an edge based, we've discovered, on strength of schedule, really, which means strength of victory. But, man, they're vulnerable right now. And you know what? All the Chiefs need to do is lose one game, Bob. Maybe next week. And suddenly, if the Steelers win and they're in Cleveland, who knows what the Chiefs will do in Cleveland? I don't know. You don't know. Nobody knows. Maybe Jameis Winston will be Dr. Jameis instead of Mr. Hyde, right? Maybe Cleveland wins. Maybe Houston beats the Chiefs. There still exists a very real possibility that the Christmas Day game could have a number one seed attached to it, Bob.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of hoping they'd lose last night to make it even more compelling.
Yes.
But, yeah, I mean, they're certainly the team that you would expect to end up with that number one seed. But if it comes down to, you know, they lose, who do they have next, did you say? The Chiefs?
At Cleveland, then home against Houston, going into the Christmas Day game.
Okay, well.
Now, Buffalo's got to go into Detroit.
But then Buffalo, after that, has a much easier schedule.
They do. They get the
Jets.
So
if they win that, they're going to end up with three losses because they won't lose to any of those other teams, I don't think. So that puts the onus on the Steelers to try to, you know, win these games and avoid. But if you know, listen, get a home player. Realistically, home playoff game should be the goal that everyone sees.
And we're going to get into this next. This gauntlet that the Steelers are now facing. And what I think is the main priority here. And then I'm going to throw it to Bob, and he's going to take over the show. I love your hat today.
It's one of many that I have that say the same thing. Why? You've seen it. I will take that compliment, though. Thank you.
Oh,
I'm
my
sorry.
God.
I was a little bit rude there.
Did you hear that, Limits?
Out of the blue,
no,
though, you
did.
Come up, you're in the middle of a read or something, and all of a sudden you say, do you like pork rinds? I mean, I don't know how to...
Do you like cotton candy, like, Bob?
That's the last time I compliment your clothing,
no,
Bob.
No, it's, I mean...
That's okay.
Thank you, Joe.
You're welcome. It's back for one night only, Wednesday, December 18th, our Odyssey Pittsburgh stations. Including 93.7 The Fan, will be flipping the turntables and turning Mike's Beer Bar into the biggest Christmas karaoke spot on the North Shore, where our on-air hosts and local celebrities take the mic for celebrity karaoke to support Light of Life Rescue Mission. Details at 93.7thefan.com, brought to you by Monster Brewing Hialeah. Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider. Text line, you can get in with Limits, is brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates Personal Injury Law Firm, where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Maybe in Steelers history, they haven't seen a three-game slate like this in 10 days, all against really talented teams. It's unprecedented, I think. Let's take a look at what this means moving ahead. 50-minute mark brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. We're also going to give out some game balls from yesterday's game, including an underrated one that I would like to present if Bob allows me. His mood seems to have
It's your show, Joe.
Seems to have turned
dour. I'm your caddy. What would you like, a 5-iron? Nah, you need a hybrid.